Hello, everyone, and welcome to Quinn Cummings Gives Bad Advice, the podcast where I, Quinn Cummings, give advice to people I do not know. If you're joining us for the first time, you may be asking yourself, does Quinn really want to give me bad advice? And the answer is no, I do not want to give you bad advice. I want to give you good advice. But I have absolutely no qualification to give you any sort of advice at all. I am not an accountant. I'm not an aviator. I'm not an alchemist. I give advice because it amuses me to do so. So you might be asking yourself, will this advice I'm about to give you be good advice? Well, I think the answer is in the title of the podcast. If you want me to give you bad advice, you can leave a question for me at qcbad.com. It's completely anonymous, and better yet, it's completely free, so I can offer up this advice with a 100% money-back guarantee. Now, let's get started. My first question today comes from qcbad.com. My friend's husband, Jack, not his real name, came to my 5-year-old's party with my friend and their son, who was the invitee. And every time I see him, he's drunk, and my daughter's party was no exception. He's a close talker and spouts profanity. As an alcoholic in recovery myself, I can tolerate him because I like his wife and his son is friends with my daughter. Plus, they are clearly crazy about each other, and she seems very happy. He's never said or done anything inappropriate to me, but several women commented to me that he said and did inappropriate things at the party. I'm trying to decide if I should say something to her. The problem is, I don't know her that well. Do you have any suggestions? Usually, I don't advocate emails for personal conversations unless there's a chance that it's going to be misheard. There is about a 99% chance she is going to mishear what you say because she loves him and will become defensive. You got to do this one in email. I would write something like, Sally, I really enjoy your company, and you know how much our family loves having your kid over. At my child's birthday party, I got the sense that Jack had been drinking. Obviously, he gets to make decisions for himself, but my sobriety is paramount to me and to my family, and I found I was getting really anxious around Jack. Going forward, he is always welcome at our house if he hasn't been drinking. I know, this isn't completely true. You said you could tolerate him. But if you get into a other women were uncomfortable conversation, she's probably going to demand receipts. It's going to sound like gossip. She's going to be mortified. There's a high likelihood she's just going to shut down. If you make it about you and your sobriety, there is very little she can push back against. Not to say she won't, but you've made it a manageable ask. You're not saying he can't drink. You're saying he can't drink at your house, which is truly all you have any control over anyway. As far as the women he was inappropriate with, that's their story to tell or not. Offer to back them up should they want to tell her, but I'd suggest you leave that part alone.
Dear Quinn, son's girlfriend is bisexual. On coming out day, he naively thought this was something she should celebrate with him, as well as come out to her mother. She was petrified and backed out. He is being a dick about it, which is my take. Dad is good cop. I keep telling him in a variety of ways it's just not his journey or his decision. It's hers and hers alone. I'm just done cajoling, beseeching, telling him he's being a real dick. Otherwise, normally, he's a real mensch for a 17-year-old. Got any vocabulary?
Sweeping gender generalization in 5, 4, 3, 2. Men want to problem solve. Women want to be heard. Your son sees his girlfriend, a person he cares for deeply, not living honestly at home, which is obviously taxing on some level to her, and he thinks, well, tell them. Problem solved. And then she doesn't, and he gets frustrated because he solved the problem. Why is she not doing what he suggested? You've undoubtedly hit all the major notes about why this does not work, so all I can do is give you a couple of new suggestions to throw at him. About 7% of teens identify as LGBTQIA, but they make up 40% of the population of homeless teens. Coming out can be the last thing they ever do with a roof over their head. Even if his girlfriend doesn't know those exact numbers, she senses the threat. She is vulnerable. Coming out might make her more so. "Her mom will never be like that," he'll insist. I would, as his mother, counter with, "Have you known her mother every second of your life? Because, among other problems, that would make the two of you brother and sister, and we're going to need to revisit you two dating." Explain to him that his girlfriend might hold some memories, things she might not even be able to fully explain or even recall, of a time when her mother was not accepting of her community. As galling as it is to a 17-year-old, there are things he doesn't and will never know. Also, when you say he's being a dick, I take this to mean he's pestering her to come out. I'm facilitating a sex ed class for middle schoolers, all of whom are, you may guess, completely appalled to be there. Too bad, because they're learning stuff. Recently, we covered what coercion meant, how it's someone using any kind of force to get you to do something they want to do, but something you aren't eager to do. You don't have to lay a finger on someone to make them feel as if you are overriding them. Remind your son that he wouldn't coerce his girlfriend into doing something physically she wasn't ready for, and that this is exactly the same. Will he stop complaining and insisting he's right? Doubtful. But he's a good person. This is out of character. And the complaining and insisting might just be a face saver, because he's realized he's wrong, but he'll be damned if he admits it. This one comes from Twitter.
"Every time I try to grow out my short pixie haircut, I'm reminded by my stringy straight hair why I keep it short. Should I try a wig?"
Well, it depends on what you want out of longer hair. You curious about what you would look like? Sure, get a wig. Just know that you'll be warm and that the good ones are expensive. You bored to death with the pixie? I understand. There are lots of short hair variations, things where you can keep the back short so you aren't really dealing with the texture, but play with the top lengths where you can add product for thickness. And of course, the real pleasure of short hair is that you can color it and be done with that color before Christmas. Do something daring. Then send me a picture.
"Hi, Quinn. My sister got divorced, and next month my cats and I will move into her house with her kids and her enormous Great Dane. I think it will be fine because we've all had a lot of therapy, the kids and I are close, and the cats and I get our own rooms. But I'm feeling nervy. Advice?"
Breathe. Right now is the worst of it, because you aren't there yet, and your brain is whirling around like a kid at a birthday party, overthinking this and imagining all sorts of calamities. Or it's just sitting there and shrieking, "I have no idea what this will be like. Ah!" Your brain is sort of right. You don't know exactly what it will be like, but you have some idea what it'll be like. You know these people. You love these people. It will probably be fine, but it will be better if your brain hasn't spent the previous month shrieking. Here's my suggestion. Decide to do something every day for the next 40 days. Find a yoga class online. Commit to doing an increasing number of squats or planks every day. Sign up for some ridiculously cheap starter package at a local Zumba studio. There are two reasons for this. First, for a chunk of time every day, your brain is forced to consider something besides the future. Not falling over in tree pose does tend to bring everything to the here and now. Second, you are creating another date on the calendar with which your brain can be preoccupied. Measure your waist and thighs on day one and promise yourself you can measure again on day 40, which happens to be a week after you've moved in. Your brain needs another job right now, and your responsibility is to find it one. It's going to be a grand adventure, and you're going to begin it with a happy heart and a firmer butt, which is always the best place to start.
Dear Quinn, how do I tell my sister she's making a big mistake with that loser who just moved in with her and her kids?
You don't. Because their relationship ends one of two ways. Either your sister figures this out and will need your support to help extricate herself, which she will be less likely to ask for if she thinks she'll start with, "I told you so," which means she stays with him longer, or she stays with him and she doesn't want to hear your judgmental tone and get your eye rolls when he isn't looking, so she doesn't see you as much, which means the kids are at the mercy of a loser without an aunt to save them if need be. For the sake of those kids, you bite your tongue. The only time this rule changes is if you feel her kids are in real and immediate harm. And the only way you are going to know that is if you, again, bite your tongue and are nearby. My suggestion is you find a friend who knows no member of your family and you vent to them. This one came from qcbad.com. Subject heading, Midlife Malaise.
Dear Quinn, I'm turning 50 in January and have recently taken time to reflect on my life this far. I'm not impressed. I want to do things, right, mainly, but I'm stuck in mom mode. How do I get unstuck?
You read a bunch of things. First of all, you read the writers you love, because I am firmly of the belief that reading good writing makes people better writers. I'm going to make one reading suggestion to you. Bird by Bird by Anne Lamott. She will take you through the writing process. She will make you feel better about the fact that the things you are writing are going to be terrible at the beginning. Because here's the thing, I want you to start writing. You're in mom mode. I get that. There was a writer by the name of Jean Kerr who had, I'm counting, five children. She used to go sit in her car to get away from her children. It was the mid-century. We were allowed to ignore children more then. And she would write with her notebook braced against her steering wheel. Every little bit of creativity you do now pays in dividends later on. I understand there are still individuals taking up the better part of your brain. You have to start carving out corners where you say, this is mine. Because eventually, I don't know if you know this, but they go. And then you're sort of left with what you have built for the next phase of your life. I want you to think back to who you were, not just before the kids, because I can only speak for myself. I can barely remember what I was like before the kid was born. But I can kind of remember who I was when I was little. And I knew that I liked reading, and I liked goofing on things, and I liked animals, and I liked being by myself. I got a little bit taller, but basically I didn't change. I want you to go back to your childhood and think about the times that you were completely happy. And think about what it was about those times that made you happy. That may give you a sense of where to start putting your energy with an eye towards the next phase of your life. Also, not for nothing, when I was little, I liked mixing and blending things, and then I figured out like a year ago, I really like making cocktails. Who knew? At 9, I was already trying to make them. You're going to be fine. You're learning about yourself right now. 50 is the birthday where we look backwards and forwards. It's easy to think, well, this isn't where I thought I would be. I suggest you look at the spot where you are and say, okay, this is the spot where you want to be right now because this is what's going to allow you to grow forward. You already have the tools. You just need to go find them again. By the way, Jean Kerr, the woman with all the kids writing in her notebook on her steering wheel, wrote some of the most successful comedic nonfiction books of the 20th century. I think a movie, a couple of plays, really successful. I will also note that a single mother on unemployment sat in British pubs with her infant, mostly for the warmth, and started writing a book about a little boy who was an orphan with a scar on his forehead. You've got this. You're going to be great. This one comes from qcbad.com. Subject, wedding dress fiasco.
Hi, Quinn. I got engaged and I bought a beautiful wedding dress. My friend got engaged not long after me, but is getting married before me. No big deal, whatever. But I just found out she bought a virtually identical dress as me. This is not an oops, how'd that happen? She knew what my dress was, and even said when showing me, I know they are similar. I feel hurt, and like some of the shine has now gone out of the wedding and our friendship for me. What should I do?
I understand. It's a great day, the wedding, and you're putting a lot of energy and intention into it. It's also a day in your life. The dress is still beautiful. I'm going to be a little brutal here. Unless you take the Chinese tradition of wearing a red wedding dress, a lot of wedding dresses are kind of similar. Even if people go to her wedding and then go to your wedding, I guarantee you nobody is going to be looking at you thinking, damn, I just saw that dress. Of course they did. They just went to a wedding. It's a white dress. What they will be looking at is how happy you are. And they are going to be looking at that happiness reflected in the faces of everyone who loves you and of that person waiting for you at the end of the aisle. That is what they see. They are not looking at details. It should not affect your day. Did your friend do kind of a jerky single white female thing? Yeah, a little bit. Now you know more about her. She disappointed you. She didn't betray you, though. If you need to make it yours again in some way, maybe it's a sash with some color in it. Maybe it's you change up a little bit of a detail on the dress. Or maybe you put it on that day and you realize that you are the most beautiful and the happiest person in the world because it's the beginning of a really great life. Okay, I think that's enough bad advice for today. And remember, I can't give you bad advice if you don't ask for it. Your question doesn't have to be profound, complex, or emotionally demanding. It can be about pretty much anything because, let's face it, I am unqualified to offer advice across a wide range of subject matter. And as we all know, sometimes the nuttiest question gets the best bad advice. You can reach me on Twitter, @QuinnC. That's QUINNCY at Twitter.com. Or you can post a question to QCBAD.com. Just log into letter Q, letter C, BAD.com, and there's a question form right there. The question can be any length, but I'm finding they work better if they're shorter. Just a hint. Before I go, I'd like to thank Richard Emmett, who composed my groovy music, and Keith Greenstein, who designed my groovy logo. People have already started asking me how they can get a bad advice fork in a toaster t-shirt or coffee mug, and my answer to them is, hang in there, we are working on it. I also want to thank Phil Rohr and Prime Rib Productions for making it possible for you to hear any of this. Okay, that's enough for now. Keep those questions coming, and I'll see you all next time.